give that shit up, you can concentrate on golf.
If you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
Great moments are born from great opportunity.
You play ball like a girl!
Everybody, and welcome to a Roy Orbison Tattoo Podcast with me, Colm, and my co-hosts, Mossy and Paul. This is episode 10 of season 3. If it is your first time listening, I would advise to go back to the start and listen from episode 1, as we will refer to previous shows from time to time. The show does contain film spoilers, so if you have not yet seen the film, I would advise watching it first. It might help you understand a little bit better. Now for today's show.
Okay, so welcome everybody, and this week we are watching Take the Ball, Pass the Ball, a documentary on Barcelona, and we've got James Scott with us. So James, first of all, give a small background on yourself and your role within the FAI and how you got there. And then you might tell us why you chose this movie.
How are you all? So thanks a million, firstly, for inviting me on. So, James Scott, I've worked probably for the FAI since 2008, so 13 years next week, actually. And it would have started in the role of North Tipperary FAI Development Officer. So basically just doing like all the programs, coach education, player development, so on and so forth, schools and so on. And then about 2 years ago, I was made the under-17 women's head coach. So I would have done a few international squads, mainly on the boys side, kind of assistant and stuff before that. And then just there, actually, about 3 weeks ago, I'm now over kind of the player development. I'm the emerging talent girls coordinator kind of for Ireland. So you know, at least kind of both roles are kind of syncing together, because it was hard to do a development officer job and be the women's head coach as well. Like, you know, it was difficult to kind of marry the two of them. But now you have a kind of a, you know, a lead into from under 12 girls, like up into the under 17s. Like, so you kind of, you know, be overseeing that development pathway.
Very good. And it's really exploded over, say, the last 10 years, like ladies football in Ireland. Like, it's like you see the number of kids, girls, especially, I should say, girls in clubs who are now togging out for it, even at nursery level compared to what you've seen it 10 years ago. It's great to see.
Yeah, unbelievable. Like, look, women's sport in general has really, really taken off now, and it's just going up and up. I suppose the big one for us really is to have the Euro 88 or the Italian 90 moment, like, you know, where it'll just really take off, like, you know. So you're kind of looking for that moment. Hopefully it'll happen fairly soon. But it's you know, and the thing now is, like, any of the girls coming up along, you're going, who's your favorite player? Like, you know, about 3 or 4 years ago it was Messi, Ronaldo and all that, but now it's Katie McCabe, it's Denise O'Sullivan is seen as one of the best players in the world, like, you know. So, you know, really interesting, like, so delighted with that. It's great to see, like, you know.
Excellent. What made you choose the movie?
Look, I'm sure people that know me know I'm just absolutely obsessed by probably Barcelona. Like, when it kind of all came together, you know, Pep, I would have liked Pep as a player. I would have loved the whole Cruyff kind of Barcelona, Ajax, Holland, all that. Like, would have been just something I really enjoyed. And then obviously when Pep came to Barcelona, and then you had to come together of Messi, Iniesta, Xavi, just absolutely unbelievable players. Like, and look, you know, over that 4 years, like, you know, just it, for me, it was it's the best team I've ever seen, and probably the best team of all time, in my opinion. But, you know, just the coming together of everything, and it was just unbelievable to see the standard and what they're able to do. And, like, as well, like, it changed a lot of, you know, mindset and so on as well. Like, you know, people kind of, you know, I mean, you had Laura Finnegan on a few weeks ago talking about, you know, player development and smaller players and things like, you know, I mean, that was very much put to the back of people's heads when you've seen all these little guys just absolutely knocking teams aside, like left, right and center, like, you know. So I just love that. And then I obviously had the opportunity as well in my role and connections to actually be able to go over there and go in and see how they do things. And then, like, you can see from the very, very start, as can I say, like, cradle to the grave, like, it's just the DNA there. Like, so what they're doing under 10, they're doing the first team, their values, everything is just really, really top class. Like, and, you know, interesting as well, I was able to get to a good few games at the time, and I got to the two Champions League finals, 2011 and 2013. I have a mutual friend, good friends with John O'Shea, so they sorted us out for tickets. And, you know, it was just brilliant to see, especially in 2011. I swear to God, like, you know, I mean, at the end of the game, I just like got up and I shook hands with about 3 or 4 or 5 Barcelona fans. I was just like, that is the best I've ever seen. It was just breathtaking. Like, you know, I think Ferguson even said it, like, he said, like, you know, in the press conference after, like, I've never come up against a team where I just felt so inferior, like, you know. So just brilliant. Just love to see it. Like,
so you're saying they're better
they're
than
a different class
AC Milan team? Is that what you're saying?
I didn't really get to see them in their prime. Like, you know, I was only a young enough chap, yeah. I suppose, you know. But again, like Van Basten, Hullet and all them, I don't know. I have a love for Dutch football. Like, I've always loved Dutch football. I done a course there when I was a young chap as well, like, and for 12 days, and it just blew me out, you know, just totally changed my outlook on football. And just I've always loved Cruyff as well, because for me, Cruyff is probably the most influential person in world football, be it as a coach and obviously as a player, but also, like, you know, as someone that was kind of consulting. And, you know, he would have said, like, get Pep in, like, you know, when people were probably saying get Mourinho in, you know. So interesting.
It's really, I suppose, like with Cruyff, you're mentioning about the Dutch now. Like, I'd be similar, like, Barcelona and Holland of the 70s, like, I'd kind of positive thoughts in them. And, like, there must have been a really kind of strong narrative of what Cruyff was behind and how he brought this, I suppose, the positivity, the way he played. And that there's a real kind of positive feeling about him, you know, and everything that they did, be it the Dutch in the 70s and Barcelona after. But I suppose that kind of comes back to a concept of trying to play well and play a good brand of football. And, like, Pep obviously is he's a I suppose, an offspring of that mentality, like, isn't he?
Yeah, look, I mean, he would have come true, like, you know, the whole Barcelona. So that was just ingrained in him, same as it is now in Xavi, you know, seeing the film, like, how just ingrained he is, like, and, you know, it's just part of him, like, so it was always going to be, you know, at some stage he was going to get the role, like, you know, it was just a matter of when, like, and then, you know, to come together of players and like, you know, unbelievable as well, like, you know, I don't know, I think it was it 2011, like 1, 2, and 3 in the World Player of the Year was Messi, Xavi, and Iniesta, like all coming, like, you can imagine that, like, coming from one kind of academy or whatever in anywhere, like, it's just unbelievable, like, so. Yeah, like, you know, it is that thing of playing beautiful football and being successful is brilliant, like, you know. But, you know, it's funny, I seen a tweet yesterday from someone, like, that said, like, you know, Bielsa, who would also, like, I think Guardiola met him for 11 hours, actually. They had a good chat, like, years ago when he went to meet him and ask him about football. And, you know, he was, you know, he took Leeds, like, from a kind of a poorish championship team, like, you know, up now to, like, 8 or whatever they are in the Premier League, 8 points off Champions League, I think, and pretty much the same players, like, you know. So but then, like, obviously Bielsa hasn't been successful, and, like, he's not going to win anything this year, I wouldn't think. But what is success as well? Like, you know, sometimes we think success is the trophy, it's the double, it's the, you know, even the under 12 team that does this or whatever. But, like, what really is success either? Like, you know, I mean, if you look at the documentary and you see the thing, like, you know, a player wanting to give part of his body to another player that was his teammate, like, you know, I mean, like, unbelievable, like, you know, connection as a team, a family, or whatever it is, like, you know, I mean, there are things sometimes you don't see, only you had the insight of the video, like, you know. But, you know, I think sometimes we get carried away about what success is, particularly at underage, like, you know.
Yeah, like, even when you look back, say, about Cruyff there, with the team of the 70s that he's the Dutch team, they never actually won anything. But they're still remembered as one of the greatest teams of all time. Like, you talk, like, the greatest teams of all time, you hear of Brazil 1970, the Dutch teams of the 70s, and then you're talking about the Spanish team, Barcelona era. But so that, like, that team didn't win anything. First time Holland won anything was 1988, and none of them players, like, I think maybe one or two were on from 1978, were still involved, some of the older players, but it was a new generation. But that Dutch team lives in history, like, just for the football they played.
Yeah, like that in 96 as well. The Newcastle team in 96, is it?
But probably Brazil 82 as well is kind of,
yeah,
similar,
true.
As well.
And like, they never won either, yes, correct.
And they didn't, I don't know where they went out. They weren't even in the final, you know, so quarter final or even second round or something. Like, so, like, you know, sometimes, like, that is success, and it goes through the ages, like, you know. It is a little bit funny because I suppose they changed the way football was seen and the way football was played. Like, Hungary 54 actually is another one, like, you know, that would be mentioned an awful lot as well. Like, you know, so, you know, like, in the 74 team, you were seeing, like, the goalkeeper playing, like, you know, 20, 30 yards from his goal, like, which, like, you're going, what's going on here? Like, you know, he was just like another outfield player, like, and, you know, crazy stuff that, like, you know, but all of a sudden then it made people think a little bit more about the game, and we're probably coming out of a, kind of a period where maybe defenses were on top and so on, and it was a lot of kicking people and bad pitches and so on. And next thing, all of a sudden, you had this kind of this freedom that Cruyff brought, like, and like in everything he'd done, like he was a little bit of a rebel as such, like, you know, he wore different stripes on his top, like to the other people as well, because yeah. he didn't agree with the sponsorship, and you know, just he was yeah, it was just something different, like, you know, but he had that freedom. And you know, not forgetting as well, like the coach of the century, actually, Rinus Michels, like, you know, I mean, he was really the person that kind of really brought it all together, like the coach at that time as well, like, you know, and he went to Barcelona as well. Like, so such a big connection between Holland and Barcelona.
And there still is throughout. And did Cruyff, did he sit out a World Cup? Was it 78 or 82?
Yeah, 78. He didn't play in 78. Like,
I think it was something to do with Argentina, the governance of Argentina.
Some political thing,
I think so, yeah.
Even during the documentary, they talked about Frank Rijkaard coming in and the role he had in kind of starting after, we'd say, Barcelona had slipped a bit and Real Madrid had took over with the Galacticos, and the role he played in kind of changing that and shifting that and bringing that mentality in, like, because it was beautiful, but they're like don't, we'll say, underestimate beauty with, like, there was steel underneath everything they were doing as well, you know, like it was yeah, there's beauty to it, but it was based on the fundamentals and the basics that you play hard and you work hard to get the ball back, like that was a big part of it, like, so it's not just, oh, we play great football when we have it, we're working as hard as we possibly can to get the ball back when we don't have it, like.
Yeah, I suppose, you know, like that's spot on about Rijkaard, and he came in and he gave him, he won a Champions League, like, you know, and so on. But I suppose Rijkaard wasn't maybe able to kind of keep that discipline, and any of the few people that were a little bit like Ronaldinho was partying probably every night, like, and so on, and Deco and all these people, like, so it was interesting. But I think you know what you're kind of saying there, and the first thing you said, what Guardiola really brought, like, you know, he had this kind of thing, like, you know, 6 seconds after you lose the ball, you get it back straight away, and you see everyone working, like everyone was working. There wasn't such thing, like, and you know, I even, there's a little thing up, a quote up there, like, you know, I don't mind you making a mistake as long as you work hard, like, you know. So you know, that was definitely a massive part of his game, and winning the ball high up the pitch as well, like the amount of goals they would have got from that as well, like, you know, so, like, you know, very innovative, like, you know, actually it's funny because I was just reading something about him there recently, and I think he nearly went a little bit mad altogether, especially with City in the last, maybe the year before, like, you know, he was kind of like going, I'm going to bring in fullbacks, going to do this and do that. And actually he said this year in a press conference there recently, I've gone back to the fundamentals of having my wingers wide and stretching the team and so on and so forth, and getting the ball back. And, you know, so he's actually reinventing probably what he already had before, like, you know.
And James, with that, like, do you think there's a fact that, like, he'd got to a stage where he'd invested so much in trying to understand football that now he's for, like, and he got to a stage with Barcelona or even possibly with Bayern, and then in trying to learn new stuff, he's forgotten some of the real core elements of what were important to his style of play or and his philosophy? Is there any?
I definitely would probably think so, yeah. Like, I mean, like, you know, everyone's human as well. Like, you know, I mean, everything, you know, every time someone talks to me, oh, you're being, like, you know, you're the best coach in the world and so on. And I suppose, like, you know, and like any of us, like, you feel under pressure. Or what am I going to come up with next? Or what am I going to do next? And to keep it fresh and all that. And in reality, I think, to be honest with you, this year he's just gone back to probably what his whole philosophy is all about working hard, wingers, you know, rotations and so on, and winning the ball back nice and quickly, like, you know.
Yeah, there's a part in the film, in the movie, which I thought was well played out, when the players really bought into Guardiola, when he went into the press conference after Mourinho had the little dig at them, and he came out of the press conference, whatever he said, and the players stood up and applauded. And I think that, like, for any team to know that, yeah, he's our manager's batting for us 100%. He's, whatever happens, he's going to dig us out of a, you know, he's going to dig us out. And I think for any team, no matter how skillful or whatever level you're playing at, it's a massive thing for team morale and for buy-in, for everybody to buy in.
I think the gas thing about that, like, I mean, it was just brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant. Like, Mourinho, like, just, you know, Ferguson, his prime, like, you know, just trying to stoke the fire, but it actually blew up on his face, like. And in fairness, what Guardiola really done was went in and it was a bit of vulnerability. He says, like, I'm not good here. This isn't my area. My area is out in the pitch, and we'll see you out there, like, you know. And like, you know, straight away it was like, whoa, you know, and like you let a couple of lefts and blah, blah. So it was like, it was wow. And, you know, which one is Mourinho's camera? Like maybe all of them, like, you know, completely playing up to the Mourinho, the way he would be like. And I just thought, like, you know, absolutely brilliant. Like, you can imagine the players after it or inside in the dressing room or in the hotel, they were just going, yeah, let's get them, like, you know, because, you know, that's like, sometimes I suppose, especially in professional sports and all that, sometimes it's about the camera. Like, you know, you mentioned already Newcastle in 95, 96, I think it was, when Ferguson really got under Keegan, like, you know, and that was hilarious. Like, you know, but like, you know, that could have happened, Guardiola, but that's good now as well. He had a couple of people around him as well. Like, you know, they noticed it and all that. And he probably had someone, you know, make sure now, and, you know, well thought out. And it was brilliant. It was really brilliant. Like, you know,
I thought, just watching the documentary, I hadn't seen it before, I thought like there was a couple of star performers in it, like some of the star interviews. I thought Jordy Cruyff came out with some brilliant lines throughout the film. We probably got through them later on. And I thought Danny Alves was quality. Alves, yeah. I thought he was quality. Like he looks like just a pure moan bag anytime when the pitch given out or whatever. But he was just like a child talking about Barcelona. I thought it was brilliant.
Like, with Daniel Alves, it's funny, like, because, like, I'd be the same as you. You think, like, he's kind of, like, one of them kind of lads who'd be in the dressing room and just be a nine or whatever. But, like, you had a totally different outlook from him after that, like, and especially with the whole thing with Abidal and you know, going to help him and all that. And, you know, some of the things he came out with, like, you know, you could see as well, like, I would honestly would have thought he would have been a difficult character, but he's saying, I would have jumped from third tier to Nou Camp for Guardiola. So, like, you know, probably number one for me is the human connection. Right, it is for you as a coach to be able to go in there and to develop them as a person, but also as a player, and bring both of them together, like, you know, that you make that connection, that you care about them, like, as such, like, and you know, all of a sudden then, if you can do that, like, you see it with Klopp, you see it with a number, like, Guardiola, you can see, you know, there's a number of managers, Brendan Rodgers as well, a lot of energy and that human connection. I think it's, like, you know, and that's not about Barcelona either. That's your under 12 team as well. If you can go in, you know the kid's name, you have a little bit of banter, they're sporting Liverpool this week, you're saying, geez, they're back or whatever, you know, and all of a sudden then you're on a winner, like, you know, because I think sometimes as coaches we go in and we do coaching badges and all that and we think we know everything, and then we go in and we know nothing at all if we can't get them on our side, like, you know.
I think if you look at Klopp there with James Milner, like the great clip there after the West Ham game, and you'd love to know the exact engagement and what was said between them before the goal comes in and Milner comes back. Like, but it just shows that the relationship is just so strong. Like, it was...
The best thing for me there, like, that's a prime... I'd just be showing that to players, because he could have very easily go off there, throw off his jersey or, you know, have him on or whatever and storm down the tunnel. But he goes and he has a chat and all that, and you can see that the energy between the two of them, like, and in fairness, like, you know, he mightn't have agreed with what Klopp said, it looked like it, but he didn't like F him or he didn't do this, whatever. He was just like respectful, and then he went back in, and then obviously they scored and it was all forgotten about, like, you know. But yeah, like, I mean, you can see that with Klopp, like, I mean, it is something that's very high in his priorities as well, is creating that kind of family environment, like, you know.
I say Milner was actually seeding underneath when that goal went in straight.
But I think one of the things, like, on Danny Alves, again, same as yourselves, as I just thought he was a star of the show, really. But he said, and you mentioned already, James, he said, I'd have jumped off the top tier of Nou Camp for him. And then by the fourth season, no, I'd have ran down the steps really fast. And I think Victor Valdez said as well at the start of the fourth season that... He goes, he's gone at the end of the season. So that human connection that they had built, like, players can sense when that starts breaking down way quicker than probably everybody else. Like,
yeah. Simple little things like that. That what Valdez said that was because I think it was Puyol and Piqué, and he raised his voice to him, like, and had a kind of rigor to him, like, you know, which he said never ever happened, like, you know. So yeah, sometimes, and like, look, like same as everything, and God, good things come to an end. I do feel, you know, Guardiola is 4, 5, 6 years max. Like, I can't see Guardiola being a Ferguson, being a Brian Cody, being people, you know, I just can't see him lasting a long time in certain areas, because I think to be in that environment, like, the energy that's required from the players and from the manager is just, it's not sustainable, like, you know. So you know, and sometimes as well, the same voices over and over again, you know, you know, especially when the standards are so high, like, you know, and it's constantly, like, you know, it can be difficult. And then if you have, obviously, you know, that season, that last season, they ended up winning the cup, but, like, you know, it wasn't, like, Mourinho actually did really well, Madrid, like, so it was difficult, like, you know. And then, obviously, you know, that's 4 or 5 years, it was starting to come to an end, unfortunately, yeah.
Are we seeing that a small bit with, like, the Klopp and, like, there's managers in the GA, let's say, we'll remain nameless, but they seem to kind of get a 2-3 year bounce. But as you said, the energy they put into it, you start seeping away. Like Liverpool last year, after what they did, you'd be saying, right, they have to be favourites to win the league. But you can kind of see this year now, they're a lot flatter than they were last year or the year previous even. And is that a Klopp similar thing, just high energy, huge?
High energy, like, you know, and then you have to think, like, I mean, they're playing games, like, 3-4 days break, game, 3-4 days break, particularly when you're successful, like, you know, no matter how fit, how well you look after yourself, it's really is tough going, like, you know, so, like, you know, and you can see that, like, in all sports as well, that sometimes it just doesn't happen. They've had a lot of injuries, things haven't happened. But, like, if you think about Barcelona even, like, if Chelsea bet Barcelona in that Champions League semi-final, we mightn't be having this chat, do you know? Yeah. Do you know? I mean, that's plain simple. Like, there's a lot of luck as well comes into all this, like, you know, and it went small for them, things. Sometimes it mightn't, you know? So you know, it's funny that way. Like, literally, if he didn't score that goal in that 93rd minute.
Yeah. You know? And it was, like, when they mentioned that about the luck of the time, the year of the treble, like, I was going back to fucking United. I mean, in Barkham, I think Barkham missed a penalty, and then Giggs gets the fucking goal, and they get 2 goals in injury time against Bayern Munich. Yeah,
we've seen his hairy chest.
When you're good, you're good, though, Colum. You know, all these things happen. You don't get that look if you're a bad team, Colum. If you just ever watch it, no, have you watched it? I'm sure some of you have. It's the All for Nothing, the Man City series. The energy that Guardiola puts in at half time and on the sideline, it's just ridiculous. It's so intense. Like, it's very hard to keep that over up for a long time. Now, I would say if Man City had won the European Cup in Pep's time, I'd say he probably wouldn't be there this year.
Yeah,
I'd say he probably would have gone taking a break again.
I think he will take a break after he finishes maybe this year. You know, if they win the league, maybe that could be the end. You know, you can see, like, but the other thing about it as well, I always say to people as well, is you know, when you are, like, even in that documentary, if you see it, like everyone, them players in that dressing room are absolutely focusing on him. There's no one like tying their laces where, you know, there's, you know, so it is a good trait to have as a coach, that energy and so on. Because if you go in, like, you often see sometimes lads going in, they have hands in the pockets, they're chewing chewing gum, whatever. No one is listening to him, you know. So like, you know, that engaging that he has, like, is unbelievable. And, you know, Abidal even said it as well, like, you know, that he was, like, going to the board or whatever to tell him, like, I'm not putting up with this, whatever. Like, because when he went in first, he was treating Abidal like a 12-year-old, like, you know, this is how you're going to play. You know, probably moving him, this, that, whatever. Like, and he's like, you know, but then, you know, bit by bit, you kind of, yeah. Because what the guy said, like, I think Conor said, like, you know, he'd tell you what's going to happen and then it'll happen. And then all of a sudden you're like going, well, this lad is just a genius, like, you know. So it was just, yeah, interesting that way. But the energy is, it is big, but it does take, you can imagine him at the end of the matches, I'd say he just falls into bed, like, literally, like. You know?
Were any of you ever just so physically drained after a match being on the sideline, where you just...
In my role, we go away for like 10 to 11, 12 days for a tournament where we play 3 games. So, you know, the last one we went to before the pandemic was Lithuania, like for 10 or 11 days. My God, when you come back, you just fall into bed. Like, you're just drained, like, you know.
Yeah.
Like, at times you've loads of rest times and things like that, but it's just, you're like, I think the hardest thing is actually when you're thinking the whole time. That actually is the one that absolutely just wrecks you. Like,
yeah. Yeah. It's a hard one. Like, I remember a match before, I think it was only a quarter final of an All Ireland Fresh or whatever. And after the match, I was just physically drained. I just had to come home and go into the bath and just lie there. It was just, you know,
I think even that point as well, that's where it's key as well, that you have people like in your, like, you know, coaches or whatever, that they step away. If they can go into a stand or go down the pitch or whatever it might be, and they're away from that. Because, like, if we're here and the four of us are over a team, like, and we're all standing beside each other and we're all kind of maybe G'd up or whatever, we're all going to just be talking the same way. We're going to be too emotional. Referee makes a wrong decision. One shouts, then another one shouts, you know, this kind of stuff. But if you take people away out of that, you see different things. Like, and I see that in all sports as well. Some people might have like something in their ear or whatever it might be, depending on what level you are. But I think it's very, very important that you have people that step away from that kind of emotional, you know, kind of spear as such, like, you know, to give you information, because you don't see it sometimes, like, you know,
you get caught up in it.
But even, you know, an example there, another Tipperary man there, James, like Eamon O'Shea, very much removes himself from the match and goes away and just watching the game on the sideline with a bottle of water, like, you know, and just occasionally engages in, you know. And look, it's different styles, and I feel a lot of people to be looking at Pep and then looking at All or Nothing and going, geez, you know what, I can bring a bit of that in into what I'm doing. And you can't, like, you know, you're yourself, you're not Pep Guardiola, like.
Yeah, and see, I remember it's about a couple of years ago getting an email and said, like, play like Barcelona in 6 weeks, like, you know. Like, you know, these are the things that people have, and these little, you know, and that is the thing, like, you know, I mean, like, I love Pep, I love like seeing and so on and so forth, and I'm sure at times you're kind of thinking, oh, I'd love to like have that, you know, but you are yourself, you always have to be yourself, like, because, like, again, players will very, very quickly go, what's this lad on about, like, you know, if you start talking a language that's not you, if you're acting in ways that's not you, you have to be very, very true to yourself, like, or, you know, I just think you know players will just show you up, really, like, you know.
I think in the film Yardy, Cruyff came up with a great line for that. He said, rather fail with his ideas than succeed with ideas of someone else. Yeah, and yeah, I think that applies to everybody. You can't just try to say, oh, it's working for him, I'm going to do it. Because you mightn't have them players in the dressing room. You mightn't have the staff with you or your mentors, whatever it is. You just have to go believe in your own way. And maybe you pick bits and pieces, but you can't just copy.
Yeah, I think the bits and pieces thing is brilliant. I just say that to coach the whole time. Nuggets. Just pick nuggets. Like, you know, you're there, like, you know, hopefully maybe someone's listening tonight and they go, yeah, that's a little nugget. I'll just, you know, a notepad or whatever it is. I just love that, even having a notepad close to me. I just write down stuff. And at the end of the week, I might look through and go, geez, that's a really good one there. You know, something I might adopt or whatever it is. Like, I'm big on things like each one teach one is a thing I have, like, and I, like, you know, with the girls, like, they're under 17. I'd very much like them to do, we're doing a coaching course next weekend, go and coach the smaller girls, because you come in and you're like 40-year-old dad or whatever, and you're coaching the under 10 girls, like, they don't really want to listen to you, but you're an under 17 international. Wow. You know, and like, it's interesting. I know you've Dara Egan on last week, like, you know, that whole Kildangan thing, like, where you have senior hurlers coaching the underage, like, you know, brilliant. You know, things like that are super to see, like, you know, and players just respond to that. They eat out of your hand, like, plain and simple, like, you know. So interesting, you know, very interesting.
I thought one of the interesting comments, and you kind of alluded to just a while ago, was I can't remember who said it now, but it said, it makes no difference how great the teacher is if the students aren't capable of understanding the message. Mm-hmm. And I think you mentioned it briefly there, but like, you interacting with those players, if you're talking gobbledygook, like, or if the one player isn't able to understand it, like, there has to be different ways of communicating what you're trying to do, isn't there?
Yeah, like, I mean, you have to find, like, that's where you have to be individual, like, and, like, one person might be, certain players might be, tell me what I have to do, and, like, you know, you have to be very, very much step, and then others, like, they love, like, what I tend to see with modern kind of players now is they want to be part of the process, they want to feel like that they're contributing, so I try as much as possible to empower them, like, particularly with the girls, like, in 17s, like, it's unbelievable, they want to give feedback, you know, so now they're very much, like, they set the standards. So, like, I'm not saying, like, you need to go to bed at this time, you have to do this with phones. They actually come back to us and say, this is what's happened with phones, and you have to follow it as well. You know, now all of a sudden, you're in a totally different place now, because they're setting the standards. It's not you, like, you know, and sometimes we do be like that, like, oh, these are the rules, this is this and that and so on. Like, then straight away you have the rebel that's going, I'm going to break that. Like, rather than asking the rebel, what do you think the rules should be? Like, no, if they say, well, we should stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning, then you might be in a bit of trouble, but... You know, but I just think it's that's what we're dealing with now. We're dealing with different people, you know, you constantly have to change. Like, I always, you know, we talk about Pep, but like, you think about Ferguson, like what, 25 years, I think, whatever, but brought in coaches that suited, you know, the players at the time and so on, and constantly evolved and so on. Like, I'm actually on a course with John O'Shea at the moment. Like, I'm just like always like wanting to know what Ferguson was like and this and that, like, and, he just kept evolving. Like, you know, you have to say the same about, you know, someone that I really looked up to as well as Brian Cody. Like, I just think, you know, you're constantly seeing, like, you know, I've seen a few talks of him. I know he spoke at one of them. I just love to hear what he's saying and so on. I think it's brilliant. Like, you know, That's from the great man, like, you know.
Yeah, but the ability to adapt and change is key for any coach. Like you said, you're a different coach now than you were 5 or 6 years ago, or even 5 or 6 weeks ago. You know, you're, as you said, you're picking up nuggets all the time that you're going to try and use. And I think it's not just nuggets, like, from, it could be from any walk of life where you're picking up these nuggets. You can pick them up from different sports, you can pick it up from your own personal life, whatever way it is. But if you can apply them in a way that you think is going to better use the coach and better the team you're coaching, is just fantastic.
Look, every day is a school day. Yeah. Plain and simple. Plain and simple. Like, so everything you're looking at, and the perfect example of that, like, Manuel Estare, I think that's how he pronounced his name, but he's Pep's assistant coach, his right-hand man, who was a water polo Olympic champion. Like, he's no qualifications, I don't think, in football or whatever, but like a sounding board for Pep. Should I do this? Should I do that? What about players? How are the players this week? What should I do? Blah, blah, all that kind of stuff. Like, so picking up off different sports, like, you know, I even look at the books out here, American football, hurling, baseball. I hate baseball, like, you know, but I you know, John Wooden is, without a shadow of a doubt, like, my favorite person to read about. Like, I just, you know, and I wouldn't be a massive basketball fan as such, but, you know, I just think you're constantly picking things up, like, you know, so you have to be, and, like, you know, you can't expect players, like, to kind of have that growth mindset unless you're doing it as well, like, you know, so you can't expect them what you don't do yourself, plain and simple, like, you know.
And, like, the common denominator between all them sports is people. Like, oh, like, it just makes sense. Like, and while Pep is tactical, you're after mentioning other people there, and Pep has got that human relationship as well, but it is more important than anything, like, you know, that's what's being engaged in more often than not, like.
Like, you know, it's simple. Like, it could be just the simplest little things, like, you know, a text message, maybe best looking exams, or you know, you know, whatever it might be, little things that you're just, and players all of a sudden, like, I know, you know, I heard another one, Alex Ferguson, like, you know, someone's mother was in hospital or whatever, send them flowers, like, simple, like, no one, like, knows about, no one this, whatever, but it's just simple stuff. Again, I just think it's just massive, like, you know, and it's not done for any, for, you know, it's probably a little bit of what you are and how you are as a person, but, like, for me, it's number one, you know, and then you can get all the knowledge and experience and so on, like, and, but even if you look at things like knowledge, like, you know, like, I see an awful lot, maybe people coming out of college, they could have maybe a strength and conditioning degree or whatever. There's no point in having it all in there unless you're applying it. Because it goes back to that, like, if you're winning, you're talking about aerobic and anaerobic and all that. Players are like going, I want to be fit. I want to stay on the pitch. I want to get stronger. They don't want to, like, hear anything else. Or on the flip side, you could have someone that's 20 years involved in a sport. And he says, geez, he's so experienced. But it could be for 18 years of that beside someone that is the worst person he could be beside, and now all of a sudden he's doing that now for the next 20 years because they had success 1 year or whatever. So I think it's very important to get that balance right between knowledge and experience as well, like, you know.
Yeah, there was one part there where they mentioned about, I think it was a different round about Messi, and they mentioned about the brain versus the brawn. And, like, in the GA, I suppose probably since the mid-noughties, there's been very much football needs to be bigger, stronger, faster fellas. And hurling now is kind of, you know, we talk about the Limericks and the Galways of the last few years and big, strong physical teams. But I suppose the one thing that all those big, strong physical teams have is they all still have the brain and the skill set. And, like, as a coach, I suppose for a long time, especially underage, the physicality was kind of attributed more as a positive than the silky or skilled player.
Yeah, like, look, playing some for me, if you're 12 or 13 and you're physically, like, you know, you're an early mature or whatever you want to call it, like, you're going to dominate, you're going to do this and that and all that, but you have to be so careful that you are developing the technique and the skills and so on and so forth, because when it gets to 15 or 16, you're gone. And, like, think about it, like, you know, people listening, think about someone that you're there, they're a superstar, she's a superstar, they're going to be playing for whatever team at highest level, whatever, and now they could be sitting on a high stool, or probably sitting at home maybe on a, not on a high stool, but you know what I mean, like how often have we seen these stars? Just during the week, actually, I heard Brendan Rodgers speaking about, it's actually the silver medalists that usually succeed, you know. And like, but as well, we are so, like, you know, it's something I'm really passionate about as well, is parents, like, what parents say, what do parents say to kids, like, after games and all that? If they're saying the coach was wrong, he should have played you here, he should have played you there, they're just developing an excuse maker, right? And it's going back to that fixed mindset. It's always someone else's fault, rather than coming out and say, how'd you play? And said, well, I didn't play so well, or whatever. You might have seen that Robin Van Persie clip a few months ago with the, you know, if anyone would be on YouTube about his son and all that. Brilliant. Like, you know, like how what you say is so, so crucial. 20 minutes in a car going home, whatever it might be. So I just really do feel like we have to educate parents, like, and all that, like, and then on the flip side, you have the kid like that is less physically developed and so on and so forth. Like, you know, again, the things that is important for them, like that they're eating right, they're doing all the kind of stuff and so on, that they, you know, reach their potential as well. Like, but look at the Barcelona team, Messi, Iniesta, Xavi. You might say they're small and all that. Try and get the ball off them. Mm. Can't get the ball off them. Like, we spoke already about Denise O'Sullivan there, I think, before they started. Like, I mean, try to get the ball off Denise O'Sullivan. Like, Denise is a small girl, you know, but, like, she's just so, like, that's what I always say to kids maybe that mightn't have that physicality. Make sure and know how to use your body. Because if you can use your body, no problem. No problem, like, you know.
I think it was interesting as well when we're after talking about Cruyff already, but, like, that Barcelona were veering towards that you're excluded if you're less than 1.8 metres. Mm-hmm. And then that would have excluded your Iniestas and your Xavi and your Messi. Like, so yeah. It is important, and that we're trying to, like, everyone has their strengths and weaknesses, and trying to figure out, right, all of them have different needs of what we need to bring up. Where is their deficiency that we need to bring up, that it's no longer a deficiency, like, because we don't know who's going to make it and who's not going to make it. Like,
yeah, 100%, like, you know, and like, what's the most important thing? The most important thing is in 20 years' time that they're good people and, like, you know, hopefully they're being successful and picked up a few things from you and so on. That's the most important thing. They meet you, they say, do you remember the time we played in such and such a company? That for me is always really, really important, like, because we can get, like, you know, I often have people going, oh, you know, she's not going to make it, like, she's too small or whatever. Like, and you look and she's 13 or 14, like, what, like, you know, what's that like? I mean, you know, talk about when someone is 18, 19, 20, and even at that, like, you know, it could be 25 before they actually reach their, you know, where you'd say, yeah, they're at their top level, like, you know. So I just think we do need to be careful with the younger ages, like, you know, and all that, like, you know, education is crucial, especially for parents.
Like, you hear it so often on TV being referenced in football matches in the UK about such and such a player was let go by Manchester United or Chelsea as a young guy because he was deemed to be too small, and then they come back and work well. I think it was Declan Rice even let go from Chelsea for being too small, and now he's a monster. The laws are awesome.
Gareth Bale was about to be released by Southampton. Like, I mean, yeah. Messi might not have been signed only for, you know, Charlie Rexha or whatever his name is. He's like saying, we have to sign him. Like, they weren't going to sign him, like, you know. Mm. So, like, you know, I mean, there's loads of examples of that over the years. Like, and on the flip side of someone that, you know, I mean, Freddie Adu was a player there, if you remember back.
Yeah,
in the,
yeah.
You know, Freddie Adu. The best player of all time. I think he's playing in the third division in Norway now or something, you know.
Yeah.
You know, so... No, it takes time.
James, have you seen any examples, or have you used them yourself, of how to educate the parents on what you're talking about there?
Well, like, every time we would have, be it like, if I'm over an under-12 team in a local, I would always bring the parents in at the start of the year. So I'd always have a parent-player information night. And then, like, as much as possible, anytime I can, I would get parents in. I think it's important as well to have a chat with parents without the kids in the room as well, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes we're very quick on parent-player, but, like, I think... You know, I'm kind of veering towards that now where like, take the kids out from it. Because there's a few things you maybe need to think about that maybe, you know, you don't want the kids kind of to hear what you're saying. Like, you know, a little bit more about the things about what you should say and so on and so forth. Like, you know, but I just think it's constant, you know, a constant thing that you need to be looking at. Like, I don't have any book that says this is what you must do, but I'm very passionate about, like, trying to find that, think about always, like, what can we do next and all that. But I'm going towards that now where you always need to have men, but also speak to them outside of the kids are in the room. And also I like feedback. I like to give, you know, so if you're 6 months into the season, bring in the player and give them a bit of feedback and all that. But now I always bring the parent in as well. Always. Right. Because I might say something like, you need to get quicker. The kid goes out and says, I'm too slow. I'm overweight. Yeah. Or, you know, this kind of crack. Like, so always have the parent there as well. And like, again, sometimes as coaches, we're going, oh, parents don't want to be listened to them. And you'd always have a parent where you're going, I don't want to be listened to them. But But like the best thing and for everyone is for that parent to be in there and try and educate him. And maybe you can change a few things with him. Because I'll be straight as well. Like sometimes I see it. We spoke about the person that was a child genius at 12 or whatever, not making it. Sometimes you look at a parent as well and you can see where that derailed as well, because they were just too engaged, too much overbearing. Like, you know, whereas you have them parents that just stand back and, you know, like see how they're getting on and, you know, how are you getting on and blah, blah, just kind of, you know, back in the shadows. I see that correlation a fair bit, like, you know.
One of the last things in the movie, and look, we've seen hundreds of examples of it, is the coronation of Xavi as the next Barcelona manager. Mm-hmm. And like they mentioned in the movie that they're putting so much pressure on him already.
Yeah. So like you could see from the movie, he's moving around like glasses and all that. It's just, it was brilliant to see, like, you know, and you know, he is, you know, from when he was a young kid, like this is the brains, like this is the person that's going to, like, you know, come back. And there's a few of them as well that might come back as sporting directors and all that, you know, you hear all that, but like recently, you know, before Koeman came in and all that, it actually looked like Xavi was going to come back. And I just, like, I think that's really interesting one as well, because we see that so often. Look at Lampard, like, you know, straight in there, like, you know, Derby for a year, straight into Chelsea. Now he's sacked. Like, where does he go next now? You know, and in English football, it happens an awful lot. Like, you know, ex-players straight in, like, you know, haven't learned a profession. And then obviously they're out the door and all of a sudden, you know, if you go to a top job, then where do you go next? Like, so I really think Xavi's done well, like, and he probably said, no, not yet, or whatever, and he's working away and he's doing it. And maybe he'll come back maybe in 4 or 5 years' time, who knows, right? But, like, you know, you look at countries like Germany. Germany have this big thing, like, where a lot of the coaches there have come from the under-18s, 19s teams in the academies. Like Nagelsmann, Ralf Rangnick, Tuchel, all these guys would have come, like, so they're not only producing players, they're also producing coaches. If you go into Ajax, Dennis Bergkamp is coaching the under-12s. Like, now he's gone higher than that, but he was. That's where he started. And you'll see it here, like, and I think, I don't know which one replied, but about, like, going up, like, very quickly and saying, oh, the top job or the senior job in your club or whatever, but rather than actually, like, you know, learning your trade, trying things, failing, so on and so forth, and then going, you know what, I'm ready. And the last one saying that is Nagelsmann, who's with Red Bull Leipzig at the moment, actually got offered the Real Madrid job. But he's only 30, 32 or 3. You know, and he said, no, I'm not taking a net. Like, because if I go there, like, sure, where am I going after that? I'm going downhill. Like, Real Madrid's the top. Like, now he might never get Real Madrid now, but like he's taking his time. Like, you know, and I just think it's an interesting one. Like, it's funny. Like I'm changing a little bit now. Before, I used to just love coaching underage players, girls, boys, and all that. Now I'm kind of a little bit like, oh, you know, I'm getting older in ages and all that. But I still love coaching new players. But some people want, even in their local club, they want to coach a senior team. Do you know what I mean? Straight away. And, you know, I just think you need to be careful.
Yeah, it happens all the time.
Listening as well to Lee Carsley on Shane Keegan's podcast, like Lee Carsley has gone different routes, and he's gone up and he's come back and he's gone sideways, and he's always picked the job that was right for him at the particular time and what he needed to work on and develop. And I thought it was interesting, and I thought, like, even, like, I suppose, as he was coming towards the end of his career, and obviously a lot of people do when they're in their 30s, no matter what sport they're doing, but getting a basis in coaching somewhere so that you can transition as you finish playing into that coaching role. And because if you go from playing and fully focused on playing to having nothing straight away after, it can be difficult for people, you know. So I think it is important to be getting involved in the coaching just as you're coming towards the end of your playing days.
Like you look at it, like, so difficult for Lampard going into Chelsea, like, absolute legend of the club, like, and, you know, straight away you're thinking, oh, he has to hit the ground running nearly in some respects, like, because of, you know, and then if he has a few bad results, that's okay, because he probably lasted a little bit longer than someone that was maybe from the outside, but look, he inevitably came to an end for him as well, like, you know. So yeah, it's a real interesting one, and just something I think you do need to maybe go, what's my goal, like, where do I want to be in 2, 3, or 4 years time, like, and you know, what areas do I need to look in? Like, you know, I'm constantly kind of looking to see, right, I'm like football periodization or planning and all that kind of stuff. I'm not overly in that. So I need to go and do a bit in that, or maybe analysis. Like, I've analysis, like, I'm okay, like, you know, but I'm only really getting into it, like, as such, like, you know. So you know, there are always areas that you can improve, like, you know, but it's just, yeah, it's just a real, I just think the Lampard one is the one, like, where Xavi could have fell into that if he went straight in there, like, you know.
And like, I think, as you said, you mentioned it perfectly. I think we've mentioned it before as well about developing mentors and coaches the same way you develop players. Like, there's a pathway. Like, I'll use the example of a parent who never played any sport before, and their 5 or 6 year old starts playing soccer or hurling. And if the parent goes in and starts with him at the age of 6, the parent will learn the skills along with the child, to give him the competence from the skill side, but also tactical. The games become more tactical as they get older. And you'd have a lot of coaches, and we mentioned it there recently, that would go into the system. And I say it's the exact same in grassroots football, like that. They could be parent coaches, and they might go all the way through with their kid until under 17 or under 18, and then they're just discarded. And this person that has a huge amount of knowledge gained over the last 12, 13 years is just gone from the club. Because one, either their son isn't involved, or two, he doesn't fit the picture of what the executive have, you know?
Yeah, like that's 100%. And I'll tell you, like, one of probably the best coaches I've ever seen in action is a guy called Martin Miller, who was coaching kind of the under-11s, under-10s in Celtic. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. But like, we have to watch that sometimes as well. Like, sometimes, you know, you keep moving up as well. Like, sometimes you get a coach that's so top class with that group, like. So now, can we make them better and better and better and so on? Like, you know, and then obviously if you're moving up as well, like, you know, how can you help that and so on? I think it's one though as well that you have to be careful with parents going up with kids the whole time as well. Like, because one of the things I will tell you on that I see, because I do a lot of safeguarding courses and things like that, is one of the main aspects of bullying you see actually is when you see a parent coaching their own son or daughter, and them giving them a little bit of a hard time because, you know, they're their son or daughter, and they don't see it as anything. But then there's people on the outside going, my God, that's like so embarrassing for that kid, you know, and so on. You know, it's something, again, it's one of them ones where you zoom out and you go, yeah, geez, you know, that's not great. Like, so, you know, and then as well, even the decision maker, because your parent is your parent, and now it's also your coach as well. And then it's your parent, it's your coach, and you're constantly there. And, you know, the drive home now could be analyzing like Monday Night Football, like, you know, I mean, I just think sometimes you have to be careful on that. And then if you have a real overbearing parent, it can be like, you know, we've all seen them documentaries like Trophy Kids and things like that, like, where, you know, some of the stories are, you know, that American football dad that was extending the arm in the cot, for, you know, crazy stuff. Like, and then you see the kid, like, or, well, not the kid, the adult, like, and he looks like he was on heroin for 10 years. Like, he absolutely lost it when he went to college, like, you know. So, yeah. You know.
Yeah, sure. Look, I'm analysing the kicks of my unborn son at the moment. So,
yeah. I have a 2-year-old daughter. The 10,000 hours are, we've got 2,000 done already. Yeah, so,
that debunks that. I'll tell you all about it. Anything else, lads? Anything else on the movie that stood out?
Yeah, I liked the way they were talking about the players had to find the solution on the pitch. That if it wasn't, they didn't have to be told all the time, they had to work things out for themselves. And I think that's very, very important. You can't be told, for any sport, told exactly what to do, because it doesn't always play out like that. And
it was the 60%, it was kind of a structure, yeah. And 40% improvisation.
Yeah.
No, because it's something as well, what you get with Barcelona is like, you know, their under-10s and their senior team are playing the exact same way. Like, the numbers might be smaller, 44, 77, whatever, but they play the exact same way. Their principles are the exact same. And sometimes you hear people saying, you know, you should play different formations and so on and so forth. You know, and there's pros and cons to that. Like, you know, I favor the kind of the DNA, I do. But, you know, I'm not saying you have to do this, you have to do that. But it is something that's always talked about, you know, sampling different things and all that. But I just think, you know, you see with Barcelona, you see the communication, like how they just know what everyone else is doing. It's just unbelievable to see. Like, and I think when we're thinking about coaching, we have to watch how we do it. Like, so, you know, if, you know, before it would have been, and I would have been guilty of this as well, where you go on a coaching course and, you know, a lot of it would have been stop, stand still, so that the tutor could see that you have the knowledge and so on. And then you go back and do the exact same thing on a Tuesday night in November and it's raining like tonight and all that, and the kids are like, will this lad ever stop? Like, he thinks he's Jose Mourinho, like, you know. And you're there like doing that thinking it's great, but like, I've totally changed that now. I'd be very much coaching the flow right? When I mean coaching the flow, I don't mean pass, dribble, you know, you're now all of a sudden becoming an Xbox coach. I'm just on the outside, just giving them little things. And I mainly coach the person that's away from the ball. So it might be, hey, like, you know, Jesse, what about your position? Or it could be, you know, whatever it might be. Or the session's going on and you just pull out one of the players and you have a little chat with them, right? And then what I do a good bit as well is we play for 10 minutes maybe and then you might have a water break, whatever. Coach him in a little water break. Ask questions. I do a big thing that can be nearly done in most field sports is human tactics sport. So we have a thing like where we have, like behind me here, a tactics board and we're all here moving and all. But actually put them out in their shape and then like walk them through things and so on. It's very engaging for players. You know, try it. I would definitely say people try it. And I just see, you know, just changing up things, like, so you're keeping them engaged, but then you're out and you're playing again. And what I do then an awful lot, if you're playing 11v11 game, I'll say to one of the players, go and do something funny. So it could be, you've seen it in the movie, The False Nine. So if centre forward now, I just want you to drop into midfield. And I don't tell anyone else, especially I don't tell the opposition team they're playing against, and now they have to deal with it. So now they're like going, what's going on here? Like, it's 4-3 now and it looks like they have an extra, no. And now you're looking to see how they respond to that in the game. And now you're making decision makers. So it's not me on the outside saying you must do this, you must do that, and so on. And then you have, you know, if you have other coaches, and this really, really annoys me when you go, and it doesn't matter what level, you have 3 or 4 people involved in the team, if you're lucky. Maybe you only have 2 or whatever, maybe even yourself. But like, if you have people involved in the team, don't have anyone silent with their hands in the pockets, like big jacket on, doing nothing. Everyone's involved. Everyone has a role. So, and I would never have people in the sessions as well beside each other, because then all of a sudden you're talking about Fair City or Coronation Street or something like that, right? You know, that's a bit extreme. But anyway, you know, so you've everyone, you've dotted around the pitch and they're doing a little bit. One's with one team, the other's with another team, all that kind of stuff. Now, all of a sudden, you're maximizing your session. I'm not talking here now about Ireland under 17s or any professional. Right? This is something we can be doing in our grassroots clubs, like, and you know, everyone now is engaged and so on. Like, you know, I we're not allowed to do it at the moment, but as well, when I get players together, and you've seen a few times even in movies, well, when they're together, they're a team, they're in together. And, you know, this whole, you know, I get them to hug up like as such. Now, you're not allowed to do it at the moment with COVID and all that. Please God, that law be gone soon enough. But now all of a sudden you're making that team. And I always say to them, I always give the example of the first team I take with that. I said, you go out with this circle. So now you break off. Now, all of a sudden, because you're out there on your own, you're off on your own, wherever, look, now you've made ours weaker. People can get through us and so on. Just pointing out these little things to them, like, you know, I just think that's, you know, little things, just team building and all that, without getting, like, you know, maybe too corny on things or too, you know, like, you know, Disney movies or whatever you want to call it, like, you know, but that, I'd be very much about that as well. Like, you can paint so many pictures with things like that. But I would recommend human tactics board. Just having their formation walk through scenarios like that. And I think it's very engaging compared to maybe using a tactics board or doing something on your flip chart or whatever it might be. Like, I found that when
I played football, that coming up to a match, you'd work a lot more on shape than you would do in a GA, coming up to a GA match. What sort of, say, if you're Saturday before a game, James, or whatever, how beneficial do you think working that shape is?
Yeah, like we would do that. Like, I mean, we usually have a 3-day kind of lead into games. Like, yeah. So we break it down like in our kind of 4 functions: attack and defend, and transition to attack, transition to defend. And they're the things you'd break down and how we're going to do this. You know, looking at obviously where we want to hurt them, and then obviously where they could hurt us. Like, you know, and then obviously as well, you're also thinking about the load. So, like, you know, like, especially girls want to come in, they want to train yeah, for as long as they can. They want to do 2 sessions if they could, but you have to always think, like, you know, what we're doing and saving the legs and all that. Like, and I'd be very much about that. Like, see, because especially with myself, like, you know, with an international team, you don't have them that often. Like, you know, yeah, so people like, you often talk to people, say, oh, like, you in every weekend or whatever, and you're like, no, like, we might be in once in 6 weeks, like, you know, and then we might have a camp or whatever. But so you have to maximize your time. So we don't do generic sessions ever. Never generic sessions, like, or fitness sessions. Like, you know, for me, fitness and football, they're ingrained. So everything you do is with the football. I would do that even if I was like with a team every day of the week. Like, it would be all together. But you have to maximize your sessions. That's what I'm saying about that session there, where everyone's working, everyone is doing their bit. Like, so you're getting the most out of your session. So when you're finished and you can go, right, what's our objective? Tick, tick, tick. Good job. You know, I think that's very important.
Now, I'm not sure, a question is there, it's just after coming to my head there now, just when you're saying we've been involved with international teams, every once in a while, like, you probably have whatever that team has come up, say under 13, 15, 17, whatever it is, but say under 17, you might have a new player who comes into that squad this year, what's the best way about going about integrating them into that?
Yeah, so like the best integrator is the players, right? Think about yourself. Go back to like when you went into a dressing room, you didn't know or whatever. Like the thing that you'd love is someone to come up to you and say, well, how are you getting on or whatever, like, you know. So you as coaches can do things, but I would always be very much about the players. And we have that thing, I said it already, each one, teach one. That's as well about teammates as well. So someone comes in, they're new and all that, integrate them, right? And we would have a leadership group. So when I started first, probably I would have had a captain and a vice captain, but now I actually have a leadership group where I look to have a defender, a midfielder and a forward. And their job would be that, like, you know, so they're people that are picked for a specific reason, but yeah, they know straight. Like at this stage now, you don't even have to tell them, like they know, you know, what their role is and so on. Like, and like we'd have girls, like, you know, when you talk about that, you know, someone like from Galway or whatever come in or whatever. I'm not talking like there's girls coming from Norway this year. We had a girl, we didn't get to bring her in because of COVID, but the USA, I had two emails today from the USA about players like to have Irish passports, like, you know. So like when that happens, like imagine that, like coming in from a different country into an environment where it's nearly like a family as such, like, you know, they all know each other and all that. And that's where players are key, absolutely key. And again, it could be an absolute negative as well, because we've all maybe been in that place as well where you come in and someone's going, you're not taking my place here, like, you know. So again, you know, you just have to watch that, I think. Yeah, but players for me would be the best way. Yeah,
I think it's a big one. Like, Paul, how would you introduce the country lads to the Crumlin? You're not you had a couple of good stories in the past for that.
Yes, look, to be honest with you, right, if a new person comes in, just kind of, and look, you need to gauge it, but just have the crack with them and just see how far you can kind of maybe push them at times a little bit. But also if you see it's going too far, maybe you're pulling back or whatever. But like, just look, you can't treat people differently. You have to treat them in the same manner you treat the other people in the group. So the group has a certain culture, how it operates, and integrating and treating them the same way you treat the other people, I think, is really important from the off, you know, rather than treating them differently because they're after coming in from a different setting or whatever, you know.
Yeah, I tell you a good story on that. A friend of mine, Danny Graham, many years ago, he was involved in Shelburne Academy or whatever, like, and he went up to Dublin, like, you know, from just down the road from here, just outside Turles, and he was there one day anyway with his gear and so on and so forth, and he's just waiting around and blah blah, and next thing the cops pulled up, like, and, you know, said, you know, what are you doing here or whatever, and he goes, no, nothing, like, I'm just waiting, I was, you know, just waiting for whatever, I know, a lift or whatever. And he's like, all right, what's in your bag? And he says, skier. It's just gear. Cops are like, whoa, you know, it's just gear. Like, and it was like, and they're checking, it's like, and, oh, it's boots, like, and all that. Like, you know, it's just so funny, like, you know, the different, but like, that's, you know, you're spot on. Just the whole culture and all that is.
I'll give you a golden axe, James. So a fella from Cork played for us one year, right? And he was after playing his first match, and he played the match before he'd ever come training, right? And we had a manager at the time, real good crack. Mick Mangan was his name, right? So we were out in Silver Park, and we were after playing Kilmacud Crokes, and we came into the dressing room afterwards, and this fella who could actually potentially be on this podcast in a couple of weeks' time, he rocked into the dressing room, right, after the match or whatever. And I knew him in advance, and one or two other fellas knew him in advance, so we were yapping away anyway. And the manager, Mick, goes, right, lads, need to introduce Wes to the rest of yous. And we're like, sure, we're after playing a match up, and like, nothing needs to be done here, you know. So anyway, Mick goes over to his bag and whips out a gun straight away anyway, right? And goes, look, Wes, come here. Because you've heard all the crack with the Crumlin Drimla feud, you know, and you have to come through Drimla to get the train or whatever, right? Just make sure you have this in case anything kicks off. Coming down to Pierce Park for the match, you know, and this from like rural enough Cork, like, is going, what the fuck is going on? But anyway, no one said that, right? So he goes, like, he's just about to take the gun, and Mick kind of points at him, right? And the place erupted. It was some crack because it got him integrated straight away into kind of crack of the culture of what was going on with that particular team.
And like,
too long now, actually, with us, but yeah.
It's a prime one again, though, humor. Humor is number one. I swear to God, like, you know, you talk about human relationships, but one of the biggest tools of human relationships is humor. Like, you have to have good crack, like, you know, and there's, you know, you can't have extremes of and all that, but if you have good crack and all that, I'm telling you, and that's one thing I would definitely say with the under-17s, we're a really good bunch that way. It's just some really good crack, you know, and you need that as well, especially when you're away for 10 or 11 days. Like, it's tough going, like, you know.
Paul, just disclaimer, Wes is from Carrigaline. It's not a rural part of Cork. Probably the biggest town in Cork.
Cork grew into it.
Right. Any favourite lines from the show or favourite scenes? Any of you? That we haven't mentioned yet. I thought just one that I thought was obviously Samuel Eto'o had a bit of a falling out, but he said, "I'll be better than him. I'll be up front with people." that was some dig to give inside the
Eto'o was in the firing line. So in the first year when he came in, he got rid of Ronaldinho, Deco and Eto'o. But Eto'o, for some reason or another, kind of like, you know, Eto'o's a really good worker and all that. And he stayed there for the year and won him the Champions League and the treble, like, you know, in fairness, scored a goal in the Champions League final, like, you know. So interesting one, like, you know.
One of my favourite ones was with Henri, right? And when Czekrinsky was playing, and he tried to give a true ball, kind of a 40-yard over the top true ball, and he was whipped off before half time because he was after doing this, which in any other team would have been seen as a good thing to be doing. Yeah. But I suppose the handsy reaction of Henri talking about that, I thought was real good.
Yeah, it was interesting as well, like the players that were top, like Ibrahimovic fell into that as well. You know, didn't click with Guardiola. Called Messi and Xavi and Iniesta, older boys. You know, that's exactly the words he said. Yeah, so it's really, really funny. Like, you know, I nearly missed it because when the film finished, and I don't know, maybe you could have even missed it, like, because when the film finished and the credits came up, like, we all got up, like, to walk out, like, you know, we're walking out along, and next thing, Guardiola comes to sit down, like, you know, and sure, he went on for another 5 minutes. I actually love that bit.
It was brilliant.
You know, I just think it's brilliant because it shows as well a little bit about him and his human quality as well. Like, you know, it was the players. It was the players that come together and all that. And, you know, he was talking about the other great teams and, like, look, if they're talking about us in 25 years' time, we're talking about them now 13 to 9 years after, whatever it is, 4 years as well included. But, you know, I thought that was really good. Really good ending to it, like, because he hadn't spoken before that, like, and it was just top class, like, you know.
One interesting thing that I found, that extra bonus 10 minutes there, I thought that was brilliant the way that was put together, was he said that people become managers for many different reasons. And the reasons he became a manager is because of tactics. He wanted to be able to dissect the game and find solution for problems. And it is interesting why different people get attracted to coaching our management. We all have different reasons for it. It might be, some people might be because their sons or daughters are playing, others because they want to stay involved, others because they want to be tactical, or just want to be part of competitions. So I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah. There's a book of, we'll say, the year after that, where he takes a break and then he goes into Bayern Munich, called Pep Confidential. And that book actually starts off with him over in New York playing chess. And the whole, there's a bit of chess runs throughout the book there. And that tactical element of kind of football is chess and the manner in which he plays, I thought was a real, real interesting insight. And that book is actually one of my favourite books because it really goes through the year in great, great detail of a particular day, a particular match, a particular training session after a match, which is, it's class. I'd highly recommend that book.
Some book, like, you know, you had another one after that as well, like, but yeah, that one is really detailed, like, in fairness, like, you know, so I'd really recommend that one as well. Yeah,
very good.
Excellent. I presume, are we going to rate Pep Guardiola and fear the wrath of current Man City fans, or will we all give him 5 out of 5 and say on to the next one?
No, I'd give him 4.5.
Oh, go on. Why did he lose to 0.5, Massey?
Because he's no Alex Ferguson.
Oh, James.
I look, you'd have to be 5 for me, like, you know what I mean? I just think he changed football, to be honest with you.
I'm only going to give him a 4, right? And it's down to the last year. Like, he disengaged early that last year in Barcelona. And there was, I'm not going to call it ego, but there was a little bit of selfishness there around his kind of engagement with the board of the club and just how he got on with them and how it negatively affected onto the team then as well. So, like, I couldn't give him a five. So it's 3.75.
It's always something in Barcelona, the board as well. Like, it actually, who's the most popular or whatever. It seems to be a popularity competition at times, like, you know.
I'll give him a 4.5, so we got a nice balanced 4.5.
Just hoping he disengages at Man City fairly soon. That'd be good.
I don't think so, Mas. I don't think so. I think they're, you know, this year. James, where can people find you if they, because I know you share a good bit of content coaching, tactical stuff.
On Twitter, I think it's at jamesscott89com. Like, my email address is james.scott@fei.ie if any coaches wanted any. I'll give you all the sessions and all that. No problem with that. I think that's important, sharing and so on, you know.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks, James. Thanks very much, James. Thanks for your time. Thanks, really appreciate it. And I suppose it was really interesting to look at, I suppose, a documentary on probably one of the most accomplished coaches of the last decade, anyway. So thanks for your time.
Thanks, James.
And best of luck. Hopefully, we'll get back on the pitches for the under 17s and all of that in the near future.
Thanks for joining us today. Please leave a review on your favourite platform, and if you enjoyed it, tell a friend. You may also want to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Roy Orbison Tattoo, and we appreciate any likes, retweets and comments or suggestions for future films. See you all next week. Thanks, everybody.